Kendo. It's like 80 in this room right now.
80? Come on. It's 80 down here. It's actually
it's a warm day today.
It is a warm day.
I forgot to start all the recordings.
No, oh, there is the recordings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you record the show.
I know.
Yeah.
That's a feature.
All
right. Okie dokie. All
right. Give a count around.
Here we go. Let's just do a normal 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
Big O! Showtime!
Pizza, pizza.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the strongest, go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see channels of LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Good evening, and welcome to show 825. Tonight, before Dan tells who we have on the show tonight, I have some very sad news to share with the listeners and community. Some of you may already know, but our friend Donald Greer, known to us as 5150, has passed away last week. 5150 was a fan of the show. He's been a guest on the show. He's done episodes of Hacker Public Radio, Kernel Panic Oddcast, Dev Random, and most recently the Linux Lugcast. 5150 was a fixture of many Linux fests, including OLF, Self, the Kansas Linux Fest, PenguinCon, and many more. 5150 was always ready to listen, had great advice, and was great to talk to. Even if you and he did not agree in a debate you would have with him, he was respectful, and in the end, even if you didn't change your opinion, you would both walk away feeling like you accomplished something, or at the very least, had a laugh. The last thing I wanted to say before we start talking about him is that, 50, if you're somehow listening to us tonight, I want to tell you that you're loved, my friend, and you will be dearly missed. The world is a lesser place without you. I'm not going to read Rich's part. He can read that.
Yeah, if I knew how to read, it would help. But 50 definitely was the nicest guy I ever spooned with. He was a real generous guy. And the spooning is a joke. That's kind of a funny story. He often offered me a room where whatever the Linux Fest was if I wanted to come out. And now I kind of regret that I didn't show up at a couple of events that he was going to be at. I think there was a PenguinCon and a Self that he offered me a room. But the funny story is OLF, I don't remember what year it was. He offered me a room. Let's see, I drove out, so I don't remember where I was. Oh, I know what. I was doing a job at Hershey Medical Center. So I drove out to OLF from there, and he had a room, and, you know, with a spare bed. So I was in that bed. And, you know, I guess at a Linux Fest, you probably do some drinking. You probably stay out a little too late. I pretty much got into the room and fell face down in the bed. And in the middle of the night, some guy had, like, the room key because he was a former employee at the hotel, and he was, like, just pulling on the doors to see which one's open. He came in our room.
I remember that.
So, and 50 chased him out and called down. I just thought that was funny as all get out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think my gun was on the night table.
So, Joe, you wanted to say something tonight, too?
Yeah, we're having a bit of a memorial show for him on his show, the Linux Lugcast. Not this upcoming Friday, but the following Friday. And we would like anybody that has a story about him, knew him, wants to say something about him, to come on that show and talk about him. So Dan,
Joe, can I tell
Rich,
the same story on your show?
Yeah, absolutely. Joel,
I will, Definitely try and make it if I can.
And it's the same server.
What time?
Let's see, 8:15 Central.
So
15 Central. I don't do metric.
It'll be 9:15 Eastern.
Oh, thank you. You know, you could just give it a offsets, and then we'd know what the hell you're talking about.
Unlikely.
Yeah, right. We're American, dude. Come on.
It's America. You only talk East Coast time.
Yep.
50 was a great guy. He's good. I'm gonna miss him a lot. He was interesting.
Yeah,
he was like,
I
kind of broke.
I was a little excited about the Hearst. Like, he went to Hearst Fest.
Yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, he went to Hearst Con instead of Southeast Links Fest this summer, and it's like, and he just bought another one like about a month ago, and it's like,
yeah. He'd send me pictures. He'd send me pictures of guns. Yeah,
he posted his pictures up on Google, on a Google Drive, I think.
Yeah,
of the cars.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah. I only knew him through, you know, meeting him at the shows and stuff, but he was a stand-up guy.
Missed out on spooning with him. I mean, if you
I did miss out on spooning. 50. I'm sorry, but
yeah, I only got to meet him in person the once he came down to Texas Linux Fest because he heard I'd be there.
Oh, the funny thing was, I'm checking out of the room, and I'm like, when you know somebody is 5150, and it's like. Oh, they asked the name. Oh, like, Don Greer.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like now, and they still do not have the obit out. I understand that they're looking at, I think the 25th is going to be when a funeral is at the Larison Mortuary in, I think it's what, Pratt, Kansas, I think it is. Anyway,
is he going to get one last ride in one of his hearse?
That would be an interesting thing.
No, we got to run.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, well, it's like how, and it's like certain things I knew about him. Like, I knew the last time I went to Southeast Linux Fest and he was there, he had oxygen with him. And he's been on oxygen since then. So
he's been on that for a while, hadn't he?
Yes. He has.
I mean, since the fire and everything, I thought there was things after mm-hmm. that, right?
Yep. Well, and I don't remember. Did he stop farming when his dad died? I can't remember.
I don't think he did.
Okay.
I think he was still doing because he had said about having to work around the harvests,
right.
Whether he could actually get to some of the fests.
Mm-hmm. But from my understanding, and this is really the only detail that I know about what happened, was that they found him at home. So I assume at that point he's already gone.
Oh boy, that's a rough one.
So, but it's a... Oh man, it's just, you know... I think it was easier when Lord D passed. You know, we knew that he right. that was going to happen with him. We just knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. But when Fitty passed, it's like when Pat sent that email. I'm like, what? I'm like, I knew he was having problems. Like I said, I knew he was having problems. But you know, when he said that was just totally shocking to me. And. I just remember many Linux Fest in Ohio, you know, be it the Ohio Linux Fest, Southeast Linux Fest, several times, just going out to dinner with him and having a good old time.
So yeah, he was very giving of his time, and he was always
there.
Yes,
he was.
At a lot of events. Not only was he on Linux Slugcast and Hacker Public Radio and doing a lot of stuff there and active in there. But, I mean, he was pretty... I believe he was real, somewhat instrumental with the Kansas City Linux Fest, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, you know, he gave his time there. And so very, very generous and helpful guy and very warm and welcoming.
Yep. Well, they also had, I think... He also volunteered to staff the HPR booth several times, if I remember right. And I can't remember if he was on Linux Cranks or not. That's why I originally edited it. I originally had Linux Cranks in there, but I remember being on KPO with him the few times I was on KPO, which wasn't very much. And I know he's been on this show several times, but Dev Random, he definitely was on there. And what's surprising to me is Pegwa hasn't said anything yet. But I mean, it's I have to laugh. If you're on Facebook, you can go through some of the posts that his frat brothers had made. And apparently, when he was in college in his frat, they had a T-shirt made that said the Donald Greer Fan Club. And it's like, I'd pay money to get one of those. Because it's pretty funny. But, of course, I've seen pictures. Paz actually had pictures of him when he was in the frat on Facebook. And he wasn't always the big guy that we know. He's tall and stuff, but he wasn't, as portly as he is. So, but, he's definitely a guy that I'm going to miss quite a bit. Hopefully he and Lord D are having a beer together somewhere.
There you go.
I think that's all I'm going to go into about now. Because I got a subject that he probably like. I think Dan knows what it's about.
But before we move on, anybody else have anything?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, great guy. Thank you. And
yep.
Oh, this is episode 825 on the show tonight. We have, in case they haven't spoken up, we didn't recognize their voice, we have Alan.
Hello, hello.
We have Pat.
Howdy.
We have Joel.
Good evening.
We got Man Fry.
Hi.
Hey there.
We have Flying Rich.
Yeah, from the Hughes Compound Southern Command.
And we got the man, the myth, the legend, Joe.
Hello, hello.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? I was trying to think of what you were talking about, Joel, but now I remember. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm channeling the wolf pit. I got me an air fryer.
What have you made in it?
So, so far I've got the obligatory frozen crap to throw in it, I got some tater tots and I made those in there. Those came out pretty decent. Probably the biggest thing is just learning how to work with it, because it's quite a bit different than even the convection feature on my microwave that it has. So, because certain things, like for example, when you use the fry basket, it tumbles. So. It helps circulate the air a bit more around what you got cooking in there. But I made the tots, and they had a. If you've seen at Sam's Club, they have those chicken nuggets in the red and white bag that's supposed to approximate the Chick-fil-A ones. I made some of those. Those came out pretty decent. I made a beef jerky. That came out excellent.
How long did it take to make the beef jerky?
That was 6 hours at 135.
So I just
got a couple round steaks and chopped that up. But now I actually want to kind of make a little bit more, a bigger volume of it. Because that filled up two trays, and it really didn't really half fill up a quart Ziploc bag. So, but I made the marinade with soy sauce, Worcestershire, some liquid smoke. I know there's some pepper in there. I'm trying to remember what else I put in it. I think next time I make it, I'm going to take some of those red chilies and throw it in there, because I like spicy beef jerky too. And I attempted to make the dried apples and dried bananas. The bananas, I screwed up when I set it. I should have used the dehydrate function. I just put it in at a certain temperature, and they ended up burning a little bit. Not too bad. I mean, they were not edible, but And then dried apples. The dried apples worked out a little better, but in both those cases, I think I learned a trick with it. Spray them grids down with some Pam or something before you put your whatever food it is down on it. That way it won't stick as much.
So I'll say, in my experience, the people, or I've had things made in air fryers before, and I'm not impressed. I don't get.
Yeah, well, and I could see why you might be that way, about it. You know, I think it just depends on other things that came out the best. Actually, was not the pre-prepared stuff. It was actually the stuff like the beef jerky was perfect. So,
did you guys get what I was saying before I got booted out?
Yes.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah, you said you didn't get what people thought about the air fryers too much.
Well, no, I'm saying I don't get the appeal. Like I can do things.
Okay.
I feel like I can do things better in other ways, and the air fryer just, instead of making something crispy or whatever, just made it mush. So.
Well, I think a lot of times too, like my wife, you know, every time I cook something like that, you know, she's a potato nut, so she wants me to cook a lot up. And what I discovered is it's very easy to put too much in there, especially if you're using the basket. So because
yeah, mine only cook a little bit at a time.
Right. Right. So I mean, it's to me, it's one of those things. I just see us using it a lot more once Luke's out of here, because it basically will let us. You just use that to cook certain things, and it fixes the perfect amount of food for just myself and Misty. So, but if you overload it, yeah, you get that. Like Yeah, because I got that too. Because I was struggling with cooking the tots. I'm like they just weren't crispy at all. They were mushy. But then I basically only put like a couple of handfuls of them in the basket, and then put it on, and then put it in there. I think I put the maximum temperature, because it only go up to 400 for the maximum temperature. And then I put it in there for like maybe 25 minutes, and they came out perfect. They were nice and crispy. So, and it's one of those things. I know my dad said he's made a chicken, rotisserie chicken in it. I'm sure that probably comes out okay. So, and then you can do, there's like recipes for shish kebab, all sorts of recipes for it. You know, now I'm probably going to start just making up some of my own, because some of the recipes are like, you're like, get this strange ingredient that you've never bought before. And it's like, now let me make it the way I would like to make it.
I did see that there's an oven.
You say air fryer, is it a convection oven, or what is it?
I'll respond to you, Rich, then Dan can go up. It's an air fryer, which basically, it's very similar to a convection oven, but it's just smaller. And it usually has like, depending on which one you get, some of them have baskets and rotisseries, some of them don't. Mine does.
No, I saw that there's an oven now that is building that right into it. So there's like a setting on the oven itself, air fryer, mm-hmm. and can do that all right there.
Yep. And technically, the microwave we bought last year has a convection oven in it, and I have used it, and it does work very well. I don't think it would do things like tots and stuff like that too well. I was talking to Tracy earlier this week, and he said that you can make french fries from raw potatoes in it, and I'm like, I don't know about that, but maybe if you parboiled them first, I don't know.
Tracy knows his cooking.
This is true. This is true. One another thing I want to try that he told me to try in there was those frozen chicken patties. You know, stuff like that actually is nice to have around here. And as long as I eat it on something relatively low carb, I'm okay with it. You know, get some of those sandwich thins. I like those actually. Those sandwiches.
But the breading isn't low carb in those things, Joel.
This is true. Yeah, but
I have the solution for you. You need to go and get a waffle maker and make yourself a chopple.
A chopple?
Yes, I have seen those, and I want to try one of those.
Oh my god, they're so good. Alan, I've been making them. I made pizza ones for my kids last weekend, and they're taking them to school. They're letting their friends try them. They're like, they love them, right? Basically, and, what you do is you mix up an egg and like a half a cup of mozzarella cheese. You can usually get like two waffles out of this. That's basically the bare minimum that you need. And you throw it on there, and it's a cheese waffle at this point, right?
Ooh.
But you can mix in like some, like the pizza one. Like I chopped up like pepperoni, and I put a little tomato paste in there. I added a little Italian seasoning, some garlic powder, and some salt and whatever. And they basically had everything right there. They didn't have to put any, you know, sauce or cheese on it. They could just take them with them to lunch and stuff like that. But they are awesome. I've been making all kinds of ones. It's great.
Yeah, I have to try those. I've seen those. And it's like, damn, that looks good. And then, of course, I just gave away my waffle maker, too.
And if you want, you use those as your bun on top of something, right? I mean, because do two of those up, and oh, yeah, they are so good. You can make sweet ones if you want to. I use alternative sweeteners because I don't do sugar or anything like that. But
so one egg and how much cheese?
Like a half a cup of shredded mozzarella cheese.
Shredded mozzarella, half a cup.
You can go buy on Amazon right now. They're called Dash Waffle Makers. They're like mini waffle makers. They're like $9.
I think I got a couple of waffle makers.
Yeah, go try it out, because I tell you what, they are awesome.
We have to go find that waffle maker.
You want to do the low moisture mozzarella cheese. You don't want to do like one of the ones that's like a really, really wet one.
My daughter got a waffle maker. She used it like 2-3 times. She was bugging the crap out of us. She did like Pillsbury, cinnamon rolls in it. And that was
uh-huh.
Done. Never used it again.
See, well, waffle iron is always one of those ones that, you know, it seems like it's a unit test tasker, but it so isn't. There's so many different things that you can do with it. You know, channeling my Alton Brown right there, because he hates unit taskers.
He's back, too.
Yeah, he is, actually, yeah.
That's been awesome. Good Eats has been great. He did a whole sous vide episode the other week. It was awesome.
Now, did he make his own sous vide cooker, or did he use one?
No, he used one that he you would buy.
You see, that's actually the only other kind of kitchen appliance I'd like is the sous vide machine.
Oh, they're great! I love it. It's so neat. Lobster in the sous vide is the best.
Or at a minimum, just a vacuum sealer, and I can basically get almost the same effect.
No,
I would say no. That you're not. It's not like boiling bag rice, there, Joel. Like this would actually just burn away your. You gotta have that circulation going.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. Is you can make the circulation that's relatively easy to do. But I guess
how are you gonna do it? You gotta get it to go at a certain temperature. And stay there and make sure that it the water that is circulating stays at that temperature.
Yeah, your oven or your stovetop is going to fluctuate up and down.
Correct. But
these days, too. They're like $100. Maybe even cheaper. Mine I got was like $120 or something. That was like 3 or 4 years ago.
But I do have to, if you do or you are interested in an air fryer, I like the one that I bought versus the one that the Wolf Pit has. Because it's basically got much more functionality than just the air frying.
Oh, you know what?
Dehydrate too.
Man Fry, you know what I just used my sous vide for?
What's that?
And this was great. Like, so we had a picnic out here on Labor Day, and I smoked 2 tri-tips, but they got done a little bit earlier. So
that sounds so weird. I smoked 2 tri-tips, man. It was wonderful, I tell you.
And I seared them afterwards, and I was like, I just stuck them in the sous vide at 124 degrees and kept them at that like that temperature until I was ready to serve them. I pulled them out and just set them there for 15 minutes like you were supposed to, and man, they were perfect. It it did such a good job of holding it at the temperature that I wanted it. It was so good. Without overdoing it or anything.
Yeah. That's a great idea to do if you want to keep something a certain temperature for a period of time. I actually did once, I did short ribs in there, Dan, for like 36 hours. They came out, they were like, it was almost like cutting into like a ribeye or something like that. That's nice and like medium rare on the inside, uh-huh, you know? Uh-huh. And I mean, a short rib, you got to like really connect, you know, get the connective tissue, you know, to kind of the collagen to kind of, you know, come out of it and the connective tissue and whatnot to kind of melt stuff like that to make it tender. This was like, it was really something.
Yeah, it does. It blows me away. I did something like that with when I was doing some kind of like ramen dish. For some reason, I was like, "Well, I'm gonna sous vide this pork after I smoked it at such a low temperature for such a long period of time." I was like, "I think it was like 2 days," and yeah, it was came off like butter. It was so good.
So I put the Amazon link for the one I have into the IRC. Don't buy it there, though, because I got mine on sale at Sam's Club for $100. And I actually didn't pay anything for it, because the one I got at Sam's, I had those, they get those reward points, so I had $120 from those, so I basically got it for nothing. So I couldn't beat that. But yeah, sous vide is, that's probably my next thing.
So air frying your way to happiness.
I want to start doing more dehydration stuff in it because I had the original Ronco dehydrator that made they had on TV many years ago. The one thing I never liked about the Ronco one is it doesn't have a fan. It's basically just a heating element. And so it worked, but it didn't really. It took a lot longer to do things. That beef jerky that I did in the power air fryer in dehydration mode, probably it took 6 hours. In the Ronco, it probably would have took
6 days.
Not that long. About 12 hours. That was for his Showtime rotisserie. Yeah. Now I don't need one of those because I can make them in there too. My dad said that if you do a chicken in the rotisserie to make sure you tie it very well because the wings don't flap as it rotates.
And also, while they do say set it and forget it, they also have an asterisk that says don't really forget it. Make sure you watch it.
Of course.
Catch on fire.
That's why, like, if you ever see the YouTuber Emmy Made in Japan.
She just did that one with the Ronco.
The pasta maker.
The pasta maker, yeah.
It seems like it worked. Yeah. Always wanted one of those, but I'm not going to buy one. I don't want to pay what they want for eBay on eBay.
She used it?
Yep.
Yeah, she found one on eBay that was like new in box.
Oh, you could have just asked me because I had one.
Well,
I'm sure, but that's okay. I was just mentioning her video because it was actually really good. Because
I would say this about the Ronco Pasta Maker. It did make pasta. It did a decent job, but you could do the same thing yourself and do better job with, just like a little crank pasta machine. Roll it out with a rolling pin and do it.
I don't know that I ever saw that one. Was it like automatic? Like you'd mix up some dough and put it in and it would just...
Similar to a bread maker, you would just dump the stuff in, turn it on mix, and then you'd flip the switch the other way that would go to extrude, and then it would extrude.
Yeah, it had this screw in there that you just dump all the ingredients in and mix it up you'd run that for like 10 minutes or something like that, and then you turn it the other direction, and you put the die on the front of the nozzle, and the screw would crank it out, and it was all plastic, so... Whenever it was, like, especially if you use semolina flour, which is what they recommended, it looked like the thing was just going to crack off the front of it, but it never did. Right?
Oh, okay.
I was surprised. Like, I was like, there is no way this thing is going to hold together. Or maybe we'll get a couple weeks. But it lasted a couple years.
In box, $103. I'm like,
you could do better with a little, pasta machine and hand crank it for like $20. You could do a whole lot better.
I would say there's well, maybe not for 20, but still cheaper than that. I can get the attachment for my KitchenAid, and they have a pasta maker for that.
Not everybody has $150 KitchenAid, man.
Well, I bought that almost 20 years ago now, so yeah,
I got mine for free, so
right.
I just gotta get the stuff for it.
All you really need is a rolling pin. That's it.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, rolling.
I do have a meat grinder of attachment. That's the only other, the only attachment I actually ever bought for the front of the KitchenAid so far was the meat grinder, and it does work.
Hell yeah, it does. That's when I made that bologna, my grandfather's bologna, a couple years ago.
There you go. I need to get the sausage stuffer attachment for that.
Hey, I'm gonna ask a Linux question here. I'm trying to put Manjaro on this laptop since I sort of gave up on Fedora.
In my BIOS,
because it wouldn't let me install the damn thing.
Oh,
it just I would hit continue, and that's where it would stay. I figure
Alan,
after 20 minutes,
you
it's
need
probably
to go to a cooking show where they talk Linux.
I know. Really.
Yeah.
But in my BIOS, do I want to? I want to put legacy support on for this and secure boot off, right?
Yes and yes.
I would recommend that. If you can't, like, it depends on the distribution. Some of it has some hooks with UEFI and secure.
Yeah, the Fedora did. I didn't have to change anything there. But the Manjaro, when I try to boot it up, it says it's not authenticated.
Oh, then yeah, I think that's the way you would have to go. But, you know, then you're jeopardizing the security of your system now, aren't you?
God forbid.
Because, I mean, look at that. How often do they compromise Linux systems through non-UEFI support?
You know, I'm gonna wing it on this one. Gonna try something different.
What are you gonna do? Install Windows?
Well, no, it's got Windows on it. This laptop has Windows on it already.
Nah, I would disable the UEFI with a secure boot and do it.
Yeah.
I was just kidding.
Alan, more importantly, how did a Windows laptop get into your house? Was it abducted? What happened?
Because some of my ham radio stuff, that's the only way of programming radios.
Oh, crap.
This is true.
And I've tried running through VMs and stuff. And it's just such a pain in the ass sometimes to deal with the USB because right. Some of these programs are like, if you look at them, you're like, why haven't you updated your program since like 92?
Right.
I've got a couple ones, brand new radios that the interface is so terrible. It's not
it
even
still
funny.
Uses a serial port in some cases. It's just emulating that over the USB.
Yeah. It's terrible. They can buy, you can buy brand new radios that do everything but fucking like make coffee for you, and yet you have to program with a radio or with a program that is just like from 20 years ago.
Yep.
So that's the reason there's a Windows box
certified
in the house.
For Windows 95.
Basically, yeah. I think they're probably still on XP.
Yeah. That's like my Radio Didi GD77. The only programming software that works for it is on Windows. That's
Every one of my radios is that way.
Yep.
I've got one. My
the
one of my
too.
Yaesu.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of my Yaesus will program off of that Linux one.
Well, and here's the worst part. Like in the D-Star,
but the problem is it won't program well off of it.
Right. The D-Star one, one I have the first ID51A, not the newer one like you have, and the wild thing is it has a micro SD card. That's good. That's a good thing. Okay, but does ICOM let you just use that as the storage for all your memories? No, you have to flash it into the storage on the radio itself. And guess what? The radio doesn't have enough flash storage to store the whole entire database anymore because there's basically new machines going on almost yearly.
Yeah, sometimes you've got to just put pieces of it on.
Right. And I think it's even that way with yours now. I mean, I don't think there's...
The 51A is that way. Yeah, you can't put the whole thing on.
Right. I don't even think the later ones, like the big one, the 5100, I don't even think you can have the whole database on there with that. And it's actually worse with those, too, because those ones can accept the newer 51As, and some of the newer mobile radios can also load the analog database and can basically give you the analog repeater based on how far you're away.
But the problem is you can't unless you take everything off, you can't really do both of them. And
that's
you have
correct.
To pick what states you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's usually not too much of a problem because at least you can have multiple memory files on the memory card, so you can just flash the flat. Like if you have like six states, but you can only fit three states on, you can basically put three states on, save it to the card, and then put the other three states on, save it to the card, and just name them so that you know which one's which, and then just turn the radio on and load the appropriate one. So.
Yeah.
Can't do that with my Radio Diddy, but this is why if you hear ham radio operators talk about hotspots all the time, that's why. That's a big reason why.
Oh, for hotspots? Yeah. I'd rather use a hotspot. I've got three of them running right now.
Yeah, because then
I've got one on D-Star, one on right. DMR, and one on YSF.
Well, that's like my DVAP one, which is the only one I have right now, but... I can fire up IRC-DDB on my phone and then switch the reflectors. So if there happens to be a reflector I don't have loaded on the radio, yeah, just fire up my phone and I fix it.
Yeah, that's how I do it all the time for that one.
But
they're all on. I haven't used them in a while, but they're all on.
None of them work well on Linux. The Chirp pretty much is solidly in the analog camp. I don't think it works with any digital radios yet.
Yeah, basically, unless you're programming, a Bofang on there, Chirp is worthless to me.
Mm-hmm. Right. At least the Radio Diddy isn't just emulating a serial port. It actually, you get the USB. I plugged the USB thing in when you turn the radio on. So it's not a serial port connection.
Okay.
So some of the newer ones are starting to get with the program on and bring themselves into the 21st century, but most of them aren't. And the reason why is because we got a bunch of old farts in ham radio.
Well, that's true there.
Guys older than Alan. That ain't hard to find on amateur radio.
Did you get your question answered, Alan?
Yes, I'm still trying to get the thing to work. Because even after I do that, it still says selected boot image should not authenticate. So I have to play around with it some more. Google to the rescue.
Question, did you actually resize the partition before you're attempting this?
Not yet, no. But I'm
you
figuring,
might want to do that first.
Yeah, but in order to resize it, I've got to get a Linux booting on it. So do it nice.
Well, Windows resize? No, I guess Windows. Yeah, you're right. Never mind.
I'm assuming that when I go to try to install it, it's going to tell me that there's no room. Would you like to resize something?
Right.
That's what I'm guessing. I don't know. Maybe
it's NTFS too.
You're not losing anything if I dump the laptop because I've got everything backed up and.
Yeah, as long as you have the OS image somewhere.
So. Yeah, it's on the D drive. It wouldn't kill that one up. Please enter the passcode. Jesus Christ, it won't even let you change secure boot without putting a passcode in?
I don't know.
I've never played with it, so that's why I'm...
On Mastodon, I got a toot from Murph. Says he can't listen live. Please pass on my condolences from 5150. Claudio also was shocked to...
There we go.
So anywho,
Speaking of vintage stuff, like, I think we mentioned this on the show a couple weeks ago, but I mean, I think it was like, I just heard about this yesterday, but 2 days ago, the 40th anniversary of the Sony Walkman was released, which is a Android-based media player, which I think some versions of it have, or it, all of it has streaming audio capability from certain services, and I don't know if it's just over, I can't see if it's just over Wi-Fi or over, like, 3G also or whatever. I haven't been able to fully read it, but what surprised me was, like, the price was, like, $500.
Fuck that.
And, yeah, that's what I like. You know, man, who are they marketing this thing to? It's not a phone.
You know who they're marketing it to? Guys like freaking Leo Laporte, who have too much money than sense. I finally took this week in tech off my podcast list. I'm tired of it.
But damn, $500. Now, granted, they said, well, if you, that the price is pretty equivalent to what the Sony Walkman was going for back in 1978 or 9 when it first came out.
And I believe that, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, when it first came out, there was nothing else like it on the market. Now this is coming out, and it's like, if I had $500, would I? Why would I not buy a phone that has pretty much all that? Like, really, am I going to notice that big of a difference in some of the enhanced audio features they have on it in their hardware? I mean, really?
I mean, you wouldn't have even bought a Pono media player, all right? You know? The Pono was Neil Diamond's one that supported, it supported uncompressed audio, I think.
But still, holy crap, $500. Alan will have, Alan probably ordered one, right?
No, I got no fucking money right now. Dude, I am broker than broke right now.
See, the next thing Alan might get, uh-huh.
What'd he say?
You say it's going to diapers.
All your money's going to diapers?
Not yet, no. He's out of diapers, but I had to buy a car, diapers. So that's hopefully not for a while. Alan. Not for that.
But, whatever. Yeah.
Comes up at nightlight. Yeah.
Woohoo. I've been seriously thinking about picking up one of them cheap MP3 players on Wish.com just to see if they're worth anything. Give it to Dan.
How much are they?
Oh, you can get them for like $18.
Do you know what the model is? Like,
I have to look.
I suspect I've seen similar to those, and like, they're very limited. Some of them don't even have a screen. You just, like, plug in, and you don't have no idea what's going to be playing next. I guess that's kind of like the iPod Shuffle, right?
Shuffle, yeah. I had the Shuffle back in the day.
But I don't know. I never used the iPod Shuffle myself.
My Shuffle died.
What retard would buy an iPod Shuffle?
Well,
me back before I actually went to Linux and then back to Windows for some things. I had one because I had a Mac at the time.
How much was an iPod back then? Was that like $300 or something?
I think the Shuffle I got, I think I paid maybe $100 for it, if I remember right.
Was it? I thought they were like $40 or $50.
Well, yeah, I don't remember. I got a case of CRS, so can't remember stuff.
I have, let's see, what was it called? The Creative Zen Nano, and it was 1 gigabyte, and it had an FM tuner, and it ran off a AAA battery.
Yep.
Love that thing.
Wait a minute. I'm trying to remember. Wait, Creative.
Creative Zen Creative Nano. Lab. It was smaller than a container of Tic Tacs.
It was the same company that made the sound cards, the Sound Blaster.
And I still have that. and I still have the Creative Zen, and it was like a movie player. He goes, heck, it probably isn't even the screen size, it probably isn't the size of my phone. I think it was 20 gig, and it had a spinning hard drive in it.
Interesting. Man, doesn't it, see, the bad thing with Wish is a lot of times they don't list any model numbers or anything about it too much. They just say, it's this, and they have a whole bunch of pictures of it. So there's one here with a LCD screen support for 32 gig. It says LCD screen support, 32 gigabyte memory, TF card, FM radio, video game, MP3, MP4 player. Which, I don't know about MP4. But
I know a TF is a micro SD card, but why do they call it a TF?
Because it used to be called TransFlash.
Oh, okay.
Back in the day. But
is
that's,
there a straight flash as opposed to the trans flash?
I
or
don't
should I say
cis-flash? anywho,
I don't ever remember being called trans flash. How did I miss that?
That's really, really old. They haven't called it that in years. Over 10 years. So that's $7 on Wish.com. It's worth it to try to check it out. And it looks like it's got, like, two buttons. And it looks like it's got a scroll wheel, like the old iPod Nanos. It's worth checking it out and see if it would work with Linux and see if you can just do... Like, I think what you want, Dan, is something where you can set a script so it would... like, for example, if you had your Bashpotter script, you can just have it copy the files to the MP3 player when the Bashpotter finished downloading the files.
You know what I truly want, Joel? I want with the Zip Clip Plus
and the SanDisk one.
The SanDisk. Yeah, I want that when I play a show file, like a podcast file, audiobook or whatever, I want it to remember automatically where I left off. So if I come back to it, I have the option to resume or not. Because in all these other devices, like
the
What was that?
What an old phone is for.
Right, but all these newer devices don't do that anymore. Even if you put a bookmark in, like, sometimes if you leave and come back and you go to find the bookmark, it's not there.
Because people use their phones for that.
That's right.
Go buy an old S3.
I don't want that. I want the functionality that used to be in the media players. To be
back
you can get it.
Player.
You can get it. I mean, from an S3. Just put the applications on there
that
you want.
He wants something that if he's out on a run with his bare feet or his huaraches, that if he drops it and kills it, it ain't no big deal. Because we know how Dan kills media players.
Right, but I'm getting closer to going back to just, you know, finally giving up and saying, I'll just use my phone for it. I mean, this is getting
honestly, it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, because my wife used to love the MP3 players, and we kept trying to find one that worked after the SanDisks went the way of the birds, and none of them had good operating systems.
Yeah, no, and if you look at any one of them today, they have a limit of 2,000 songs that you can put on there. So you can put like it's like, oh, it supports a 32 gig SD card, but it will only store 2,000 songs in this database. So you if you like to do something like shuffle, like just shuffle through the songs, it'll only shuffle through those 2,000 songs that loaded in the database.
Hey, you know what won't have that problem?
A phone.
Unless you're using Spotify, in which case it will only shuffle through the handful that it first did the first time you did it 5 years ago.
But that's Spotify.
Yeah, I know.
I don't use,
so fucking
I use
annoying.
Google Play Music right now. That's my music. Like, if I want music to listen to that either I don't own or whatever, Google Play Music, baby. I just stream it all.
Well, you can get the Samsung MP3 player, but, you know, that might as well be a phone.
Yep.
So, okay, now I have a question here. We have Amazon Prime, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one day, a couple weeks ago, my wife brought home the Amazon Echo that she had tried to use in her office to play music, but it just wasn't a good match. And I'm like, the kids loved it at first. They're like, Echo, play, or what is it?
Ask for a fart.
Alexa, play this song. And I'm like, well, it's just playing the song. Who's paying for that?
You are.
Like, what am I paying? Like, what service is that?
Amazon. You're using Amazon Music.
Part of the Prime. No.
I don't know.
Right. No, certain songs you have to have Amazon Music for, but a lot of the songs just come with Prime. And then there's another tier of it that you can get the Amazon Music family, which allows multiple Echoes to be playing music at the same time.
See, I got to look at the service that we have now, because I'm like thinking to myself, wait a minute.
But if you're paying for Prime, then you do get some music. But if you're paying for Prime Music on top of Prime, then you get more music.
Because, you know, at that point, you know, I'm like looking there saying, why even bother? Just like, just set my phone to use the same thing and just shuffle through all the songs. You know, just pick a genre and shuffle through it instead of.
Yeah, you can pick a genre on Prime.
Yeah, I'm just.
And if you have a phone?
Stuck in 2006, I guess. Right.
If you have a phone, you can actually, you know, put Alexa on there.
Yeah, I know. I removed it from my phone because I didn't want it.
And probably tell it to play music.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Or I can, you know, subscribe to Spotify. But the only time that doesn't work, like, is if you have shitty cell phone signal and you're not at home in a while. Like, then it's like, bah, boo, that sucks.
Yeah, but I don't think you can do Spotify on an MP3 player.
Well, I don't do Spotify anyway, so. Now, you know what? Actually, that's a good question. Some of them might.
Well, yeah, the Samsung one that's, you know, practically a phone, minus the cellular radio.
I'll bet the Sony Walkman has a streaming device, right? Did they talk about that streaming player? Yes, oh yeah. Too much.
Yeah, but is that Samsung Galaxy MP3 player? That's Android 5. How much longer is that going to be supported?
It's a fairly old device. And honestly, all you could get, like, you know, an S3, an S4, an S5 for the same price, because I think the Samsung players are still going for like $125, $150.
Or $200, because that's the only one I found on Amazon. $229. Or you can get a cheap ass blue phone.
Yeah, that'd do it. I mean, when you can get a phone for $50, does it matter if you drop it in 6 months?
Not really.
Yep, blue phone, blue G9 Pro, was $199.
Let's see how much the S3 Minis are going for on eBay.
The blue Vivo Go version 2.0 is $80.
Using an I $30.
I thought
about using an S3 Mini that way. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good idea, right?
Heck yeah, that's a real good idea.
It's an S3, except it's smaller.
It's like two-thirds the size, right?
Something like that. It's fairly small, which makes it, you know, MP3 size range.
And you can drop an SD card in. It's got a
removable battery.
Wow, they're still up there between $242 and $299.
I just saw one on eBay for $30.
So on those devices, you can connect to the store to download software on them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When you're on
Wi-Fi. Through Wi-Fi, because
then a lot of the streaming services like Google Play will let you download music to your phone.
Now, so that's Android 4.1, right?
That's the bad part.
I'm sure XDA has custom ROMs for it that are newer.
I was going to say, at what point do like those applications stop working or supporting?
Yeah, a lot of them are starting to drop.
Yeah, you might have to go with like F-Droid or something.
Yeah.
Find old applications.
Wow. It's a thought. It is a thought. But yeah, $500 for a media player like that. That's Alan kind of spending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can only wish anymore. Someday.
Now you know how it feels.
I never knew how it not felt. I mean, you know, I've always been poor. I just have a very easy use of a credit card, and that's been my problem. I'd like to say I make a lot of money, but I don't really do that.
And Man Fry.
Yo.
I have a question for you. Because you work for a company that supports a lot of other companies doing different things. So, what's your feeling? Like, are you seeing a lot of companies really migrating towards services as opposed to... like rolling their own, you know what I mean? Like, instead of like a SQL database, going with like Google Span or AWS relational databases, where they're hosted by Google or AWS or a cloud service, instead of like hosting their own services like that. Do you see that quite more and more, like happening more and more?
I mean, the ones that I see mostly are building on top of those services, but they use our stuff on top of it. But there's been a shift now to Kubernetes, so I think a lot more are moving towards Kubernetes, and that's going to be kind of the pathway forward. That we're adopting that ourselves as a pathway forward. So,
but are you rolling your own Kubernetes, or are you using Google's Kubernetes engine? Or do either.
Well, I mean, we have our bolt on top of it, right? So it's using vanilla like under the hood, right?
So your service, like you're doing the hosting of
no,
so
no, when, it, typi-
when someone contracts clients, with you,
typically the clients provide their own hosting for that. So it's not something directly through us. However, you could go out and subscribe to a service that we provide that allows you to, say, run this environment wherever you wanted to, but it's run in our cloud. I wouldn't say that that's, you know, I mean, it's a full-fledged system. It's not, you know, whatever. I mean, you could run it in any number of ways, right? But they are, you know, they're building on, they're getting access to services, like you said, like what were you saying, like MySQL or something like that, you know. Those can be added on as tiles that you subscribe to inside a Cloud Foundry, right? And so whether or not that's being hosted on a Kubernetes cluster somewhere or off an AWS, like through an RDS instance or, you know, GCP or something like that, right? I mean, all of that stuff can be brought in one way or another to the system to make your applications accessible to them.
Yeah, I was just curious if you, because like I know that there's a lot of groups inside an organization that are starting to move off of, like, they're going from Solr to Elasticsearch, which is hosted, I think, using Google's hosted service, and then from Couchbase and some, you know, other types of databases to Spanner and the other offerings inside of Google. Instead of having to maintain and host it and keep it updated themselves, offloading that to the services that Google offers. Because they seem to be really buying whole hog, like RabbitMQ, trying to migrate away from that for the Google Pub Sub.
Don't worry.
Right, yeah. That's what it looks like they're looking at into doing. And I mean, part of the reason why is it's like it takes away some of the responsibility of the infrastructure, you know, that looking at that as an infrastructure. So instead of having to worry about the sizing and up to keeping it up to date and upgrading and all that crap, like, let somebody else handle that and just focus on utilizing that service.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're in that environment, sure, you know, go with that as a backend service like that. But you should be able to bind it into your applications in a similar fashion in an easy way, right?
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah. And if we ever wanted to, we could just go switch it out, you know, and use a different publication messaging queue service, you know. But it just seems like I'm noticing a lot of companies migrating towards using where they used to do it themselves before, now going to bigger companies like Amazon. Or
well, if they're going to handle upgrades and uptime and all that stuff for you, then by all means, like, go for it, right?
Yeah, no, yeah. I see the benefits of it. But I'm like, managing solar is my bread and butter. Taking it away from me. Oh. Shit, I haven't done any solar stuff in a while. It feels kind of weird. Rear its ugly head soon. Right, Alan?
Very much so. Well, I have no clue what you're talking about, so I'll let it go with that.
You know, I'll tell you what, though. When Dorian came through here, I'm like blown away. This is like last year. What was the hurricane that came through here last year? I forget what it was called. But like that veer hit the Outer Banks and went inland and around us. Dorian hit the Outer Banks and went out into the ocean and around us. And we got so lucky a second time. Like, all we got down here was some wind and a little bit of rain.
So the Thank worst goodness. For me with Dorian was 2 weeks ago Thursday. And I took the day off to put my shutters up. And 7 a.m., a feeder band came through, heavy wind, heavy rain. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that's it. I'm not going to be able to put my shutters up. And nothing. You know, and that was, it came by like Tuesday, you know, in the a.m., so late Monday night, you know, Monday after dark.
Uh-huh.
It really was nothing. There were, you know, just a couple of twigs in the yard. But, yeah, my living room, all my pool furniture is in the living room, my shed's all packed up. I took the shutters off the sliding glass doors because it's like a cave otherwise if we don't get light in here. And I took them off my office and, you know, so we get a little bit of light. But, you know, typically in Florida when you put your shutters up, you leave them up until November. And it takes about 4 hours to put them up, so.
I can see that. Now, like, you know, when they were projecting that it was supposed to come through here, they did mandatory evacuations for Zone A in Sandbridge, which is like south of us, just right above the Outer Banks. But the rest of Zone A in the area where I live is voluntary evacuations, worried about flooding and stuff. So we didn't evacuate. We were watching everything. We moved everything out of the basement, pretty much everything. And, like, none of our other neighbors did it again. Like we saw, I guess they were just, hey, we'll take the risk. But we decided after this time again, we purged a whole lot of stuff at America's Dumpster Goodwill, and instead of moving anything that we wanted to keep back down here, put it in a garage. Because we're like, this is ridiculous. You know, the next time a storm comes, we just gotta lug all this shit back up here again. we just stick it in the garage, it's gonna be up high enough and better off.
In fact, I gotta set up Ansible because you know, my infrastructure between my VMware lab and all of the, you know, single board computers I have going on, it took me a while to shut down everything. I gotta get Ansible set up so I could just issue a shutdown command and have everything go down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, I hear you on that too. I was like, the one big problem I have in all my infrastructure is like this Unify Gateway, which is a wonderful device, but requires this application to interact with it. Like, you could do some rudimentary stuff, but there's two ways you could do it. I think you could, like, have them host that information for you, but you have to upload your stuff to them and give them, you know, you get access through them and opening that up. And I was like, no, I'm gonna just host it myself. I don't need them to do it. But the application really only works under Ubuntu or Debian, and I installed Fedora on here to play around with it. So I thought they had RPMs for it, but they don't. And then I was like, well, there's an Android version. But the Android version, while it works great, requires you to connect to it running on a computer somewhere, right? So that was like, okay, that doesn't do me any good. But, you know, what was it, Thursday night, as everything was going on, I just, like, pulled down the image for Ubuntu and installed it in VirtualBox and set it up that way. So I just would have the application to make sure it comes back up. And if something were to go wrong, have the backup to restore on and be able to do it, just to be on the safe side. But yeah, having to dismantle everything is a pain in the butt, too.
Migrate to the cloud.
I have my own cloud. I don't need your cloud. Well, that's like... let me talk a little bit of cloud tech. I don't know if you heard about ITAR. So that's the International Trade and Armaments, whatever. I forget what ITAR stands for. So, Pat, is your scope covered under ITAR?
A lot of them are. Especially, anything that's considered, military grade, say, a Trigicon or, a Namepoint or a EOTech.
Wow. Yeah, you know, they're fairly simple. So I just figured simple devices like that wouldn't be a big deal. Pat and I both have scopes. I've got the ATN X4K, and basically it's like a video camera and a computer in it. And it offers a whole bunch of features. Like, if you're into long-range shooting, it basically does all the dope for you. You just enter, barometric pressure, humidity, and wind direction and speed. And then it knows GPS location, elevation. You can put in projectile velocity and the drag coefficient of it. And it'll calculate, you know, hey, all right, at 1,500 yards, it's going to have this much of a drop. So you just dial it in. Or you can get the accessory laser rangefinder, and you don't even have to dial in the range. You just, you know, aim it in the right direction. Anyhow. So ITAR requested, because there's an Android and an iPhone app for that runs the scope, and you can actually stream to an Android phone or tablet or an Apple phone and tablet the live video from the scope. Oh, and the scope will take a picture. You can set it to 5 seconds before and after a round is fired because it's continuously writing to memory. So they want now, because they know your phone, let's just say your Google account or your Apple account, they know what country you're in, and I guess they can pick up the GPS location off the device also. Since it's restricted by ITAR, they were asking for the entire install user database. I'm like, wait a second, you just want the guys that are not in the country, don't you? But I did do a video on this, and it's on flyingrich.com, so I just want to get in the pimping of my site.
It's basically a backhanded gun registry, basically.
Pretty much. And I guess the scary thing is, say I'm not allowed to shoot on my property, but I have a bullet trap in my basement, and I shoot, and, I mean, is it going to snitch on me? What's the next level on this?
But I have a question about the scope.
Yep.
Like, you said it has GPS coordinates, right?
Oh, yeah, it's got GPS what? Because it's
why
calculating...
Why couldn't it just get the barometric pressure from one of the online services, or... Don't they have the capability of...
So,
couldn't they build that into scope, that?
My scope acts like a Wi-Fi hotspot, and it probably could pull the data from the phone app when the phone connects to it. It probably could pull the local weather data. But, you know, wind direction and speed can be highly localized.
But how are you getting barometric pressure?
Yeah, I'm probably typing it in from my phone, but wind speed and direction I'm going to measure myself.
What do you use to measure wind speed and direction?
Wet finger, you know.
A wet finger?
Yeah,
I
don't have
science! How could that be any more accurate than using, like...
I've got a scope that figures out everything except that I'm using my finger for the weather, for the wind.
What, you don't think that's reasonable?
Well, I mean, how much more accurate is that than, like, the general wind velocity in the area that would be reported through a weather application?
Well, if you're long-range shooting, the wind is very important because you can have gusts, so you need to watch, like, foliage and whatever, how it moves, so you know what's going on. At 100 yards, it's not that important. But once you start getting out to 1,000 yards, it gets pretty important.
Well, and that's why I say, do they have... I guess at that point, you're better off if you're going that long range of a direction, the laser point.
Well,
right?
For laser range finding, yeah.
Well, that's not going to tell you that wind direction is wind
no,
speed.
No, but they'll hang, like, socks, you know, wind socks or so you can see the general direction and the speed.
Right.
Like, an airport windsock is actually calibrated based on the angle that it hangs. You can tell the wind speed from that.
So you're carrying around your windsock. You put it up, and then you put that scope on and aim a mile out, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, actually, I think I may be going to an event this weekend, and we can shoot up to a mile.
Sweet. And you lick your finger and say...
Oh, I just closed
that
my eyes.
That windsock is wrong!
Yeah, at a mile, I just close my eyes and pull the trigger. It doesn't matter. Wow. I've never shot out that far, so I don't know anything about that stuff.
Now, after the show, I have to top my son off a cliff because, practically, the check engine light came on the cruise again. It came on, like, a few weeks ago, went off, didn't come back on for a while, and now it's back on, and... I asked the wife, I said, did you guys get gas today? She said yes, and it's probably the gas cap again. It's like...
You have an OBD2 scan tool?
I don't.
Dude,
I'm not going to buy
Amazon,
one.
Wait, like
they...
$12.
Dude, I can just go to freaking Advanced Auto Parts and they'll hook it up for free.
Not
yeah,
not always
you don't
true.
Have to spend, you don't have to spend your time
Mine
going
will.
To Advance.
I had that one time. I had the Prius a couple years back. Had the check engine light goes on. So I go over to
an
Gas
engine?
Auto. Yeah, there's an engine.
You don't
unit,
just
yes.
wind it up?
You don't just wind it up. And sometimes, you know, if you forget the key, there's an engine. But I go over there and the guy, you know, I walk in there and I'm like, you know, can you check the check engine light for me? So he comes out and he reaches underneath the dash and he's like, oh, there's no codes here. Now at this point, the light had gone off. So I'm like, okay. And a little while after that, about a month or two later, I decided to get an ODB2 reader on it. So I used what the hell's the app?
Torque?
Torque, yeah. Yeah, I used Torque. So I bought one of those things on there. And I go look to where he plugged in, and I'm like, there's no fucking connector underneath here. The connector's on the right side of the steering wheel. Hanging down, I mean, you can basically see it if you just look at it.
Right.
He stuck it up underneath the footwell.
I was like, fucking lazy ass motherfucker, you know?
Wait, I mean, he didn't even connect to the...
He didn't even connect it. He just pushed it underneath the footwell, and because I'm standing outside, I don't know. At this point in time, I didn't know where it was. So I'm like, right. Okay, that's, you know, because most of the cars are up underneath.
Either. Yeah.
Well, no, he didn't even know where it was either, because most cars, you know, a lot of cars I've seen are up underneath the footwell on the left hand side.
Right.
But the Prius isn't. But you know, like, you know, please tell me. Oh, I don't know where it is. Okay, well, that's fine. I'll go somewhere else where we have somebody intelligent behind the counter. But still,
wait a minute. Did it? Oh, say okay. So wait a second. Like, how could you use that as an excuse? Like, not you, but this other person. Like, oh, I don't know where it is.
Well, yeah, I work in an auto parts store, and I don't know.
Look.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I work in an auto parts store, but I'm too stupid to figure out where the heck the thing is. And he just puts it underneath there and shows me the thing going, oh, nothing came up. Yeah, because nothing came up, because now I know you didn't freaking read it.
Oh, my God.
Joel, just to make you feel bad, my 17-year-old daughter that thinks you have to plug in the fire pit, she has an OBD2 reader, and she knows how to use it.
Definitely go for like the Torque app and one of the readers. I mean, it's like $20 total.
Well,
yeah, even buying it, you know.
And if the car wasn't under warranty, yeah, I'd do that. But now it's under warranty, I don't give a fuck. I'm just gonna take it to the dealer, have him fix it for $0. Hello, that's why it's part of my loan.
See, I like to know what the problem is, because if I'm going to take it to the dealer to get it fixed and it's not something that would be covered under warranty, 9 times out of 10, you could probably do it yourself for a lot cheaper.
Depends what it is.
The question is, do I need to take it to the dealer now, like get it towed there, or do I make an appointment, take it there in a week? And that's what I think the important part is.
That's another good point there, too.
But most of them, if the car's running just fine, but the check engine light's on, it's usually something stupid.
It's only emissions stuff.
Right.
The check engine light only works for emissions. Like, the Prius is right now is going on and off, and it's because there's this stupid valve in the front that basically, when you turn the car off, it sucks some of the antifreeze into like a thermos bottle.
Right.
So when you first start the car, it squirts it all back in. It's supposedly supposed to, you know, warm up the car faster, but I don't understand how that would actually work if you're overnight. It's got to be cold by that point anyways. But because that valve is sticking now, whenever it sticks, the light comes
engine
on.
Light comes
and
on.
Then it goes off, and, you know, the only thing you need to worry about is if it's, as long as it's not on when you take it through inspection.
Right. And in our case, too, there's like two levels of check engine light. If it's just on solid, and it usually ain't nothing to worry about. If it's on solid, if it's flashing, that's a problem. You know, then you have to get it checked right away.
If it's flashing, generally you're jittering along, though, too, aren't you? Like,
yeah. It's probably not running right. You know, in their case, they just made it home, so.
If you lived in a free state, they don't inspect your vehicle each year. Or ever. Mm-hmm.
Well,
like Ohio.
Yeah, I see some of the shit cars in Ohio riding around there.
You know what? Alan,
duct tape holding them together.
I am, other than some of the stupid things I've seen,
or
them fail
on blocks
a car
in people's driveways.
Well, so other than some of the stupid things I've seen, PA inspection sites flag, like, at
home.
Yeah, like little tiny, like dime-sized piece of
your
rust hole.
I got flagged this year because my windshield washers didn't work.
Lord help us.
I swear to God.
Was it empty or they just didn't work?
No. The motor had burned out, and I knew the motor burned out. I just didn't, you know, it was like winter. I'm not going to fucking get it fixed then, because I don't got the money for that. And you know, there's a $2 spray bottle that you can, like, hold out the window while you're driving down the road and squirt it. It's my ghetto washer. And it worked perfectly fine for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, take it through there, and the guy's like, he goes, I got a failure for that, because the state makes me failure for that. You can actually get failed for not having a tailgate.
Yep.
On a truck.
There's all sorts of reasons you can get failed. Like, I know my dad got failed one time, hadn't had the car a year, They said they needed new brakes. After only a year. I'm like, are you nuts?
Well, that's because my problem with that also with Pennsylvania is because the same people that inspect it can fix it.
Yeah,
and that's why they tend to find a lot of things that you wouldn't, you know, normally care about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like the windshield washer.
The old car that failed because it had a dime size hole in the frame. You know how my dad fixed it, Alan? Got a couple pieces of fiberglass, stuck it over there, and then got a can of the black sticky rust proofer, yep. Sprayed it all over there. That way, when he opens it up to look at it, he's going to see that in there, and he's not going to want to touch it.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was an old car, you know, and that's the thing. You know, my son has a nicer car than I ever had at his age.
Yeah.
I had a 1980 Oldsmobile Cutlass, and it was 1990 or 92 when I finally got rid of it. No, wait. I didn't get rid of that until 97. I got rid of it like my first day back to work. After I got married in 97, the muffler fell off on I-70. So I come roaring into campus, blah, 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 blah. You know, I was so pissed off. So anyway, I was like hoping that would hold on for a little bit, but nope. And then I went, got it fixed. And then I looked at my then new wife and said, "We're going to the car dealership Sunday."
My problem is I've already gone to the Prius has 214,000 miles on it right now.
Right.
And I'm starting to worry about the, it's getting up in age and like some little things are going wrong. The battery is
starting to fail.
Well, that's the one I worry about because, you know, if I got rid of it now, even with all the problems, I could still get like $2,000 for it. If it goes with the battery, it's basically just going to end up at the junkyard.
Scrap, right.
Yeah, because nobody's going to want it at that
point. Kit.
But the problem is you're dropping into a car like right now. The latest thing that went wrong on it is the display unit and the center console, which basically controls like 90% of the car. It's through that thing.
And the cool animation now, while you drive.
Yeah, the little wheels that turn. Yeah, and so I can get around it, because the temperature still works because those are off the steering wheel. Radio, you're sort of like, it's a crapshoot. You can push the button and have it scan, but you can't actually, program it for anything. Like I said, luckily the heating unit.
I'm assuming it's not like it's a blown fuse.
No, it's the display went on it. It's been going for a long, long time. Every once in a while, it would just turn off, and then you'd hit a bump, and it'd come back on again, or it'd be like half the display was on. So it's finally gotten to the point where it just
solder joint. I know this guy that develops, like integrated circuits and stuff like that for the cell phone companies. He might be able to help you.
Well, it may be more than that because, like I said, as it's gone out, a lot of the things that are associated with that also went out, like the phone connecting. All that stuff went out too. So I don't think it's just a display on it. I think it's actually.
So it sounds like it's power.
Yeah, something else is going on there. But. It's like I said, it's 10 years old.
You
can
watch a YouTube video and figure it out and fix it yourself in about 10 minutes.
Well, I've been looking at that stuff, but so far nothing's worked so far.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'm probably gonna have to get a
Chris fix.
Right. Well, my son's like, well, we should get a new car because that light keeps coming on. I'm like, no, fucking no. We have no fucking idea.
No, get a new car. Give him the payment.
He would get repossessed. But, I'm like, it's just nothing. It's a check engine light. It'll probably probably fix it. And, hey. I need an oil change anyway, so I might as well pay them to do that too, because I'm not doing an oil change. So, it's called learning your limits.
I do all my own oil changes.
Well, that's good for you, Rich, but that's not something that's going to work for me.
Axle changes, brake jobs, transmission changes.
Yeah, anyway.
Just because I'm too cheap to pay anybody to do it.
Well, see, there you go. Because I don't think Dan would work on his car too much.
I would do everything I have the capability of doing. Like, I'll do my own oil.
I change my ignition coils.
I change, like, if I have to take, like, if I have to take a drive belt off, I probably won't do that.
Right.
Because I don't have the equipment.
Yeah. See, and I could. But you need more, quite a bit more when you're doing that, usually. Like, you probably got to set the timing after you put the new belt on, you know, hey?
Oh, you're talking about a timing belt.
That's a timing belt. If you're just replacing, you know, a fan belt or something like that now. You know,
okay.
You see,
I ever did was I did it in, like, under 25 minutes from clean hands and tools put away to clean hands and tools put away. Toyota Tercel, what year was it? I forgot what it was. But it only had an alternator. You know, it had one belt, mm-hmm. an alternator belt. You pop that off, you pop a couple of screws on the plastic covers, pull the belt off, put the new belt on.
See,
I couldn't believe how easy that was.
Yep, and you know what? The way they used to do the old belts and stuff on cars, I don't know if it's more reliable or not, but I can tell you one thing, it's definitely a lot easier to work on. You know, my 80s... I had a 1980 Cutlass Supreme. That thing, about once every 2 or 3 years, the fuel filter would need changed out. So I knew where it was. It takes me
Stop
all
buying that cheap fuel.
Right.
Well, you gotta
whatever.
Make the fuel tank stop rusting first.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I mean, so you know, and when I got rid of it, it was time. But you know. Yeah. But
you
that car
tell me it had a timing belt because that car had a chain.
No, that one had a chain. I know that, but it did change the alternator belt in it once. But and I've done stuff like that. I'd like to do oil changes are not too bad, but on modern cars they're a pain in the ass because there's usually cowlings and other stuff, and I can't bend that way anymore. But
that's why you have a son.
Well. Actually, I think we've got them halfway talked into going to. They have a good automotive program at Columbus State. I tell them, dude, you can go there and you can make some bank. Once you get out of there, you can go work for a garage and you're gonna make. Now, there's a guy we used to know. Like it was his den leader when he was a Cub Scouts. That guy's always constantly looking for money and a job and stuff. But you know, I don't know that he actually ever. Went to school for any of that. So if you go to school and you really learn how to fix the cars, especially nowadays, and that's the other thing too, is the cars nowadays are not as easy to work on as they were, you know, 80s, 90s, even 90s cars weren't too bad to work on. But once you get too much above, especially anything above 2008, there's just so much other crap you got to deal with.
I don't understand. I watch, you know, Bees for Build, Chris Fix, let's see, Tavarish.
Sam Tavarish, yeah.
Oh, Goon Squad. They had a whole episode on getting their battery charged, and they brought it to, like, Pep Boys to get their battery charged.
Right. Like, really, but those guys? Are the things, the car things are things I would not mess with. Some of the things around the house I won't mess with. So, like, if I had to change the door locks in my house, no problem. I can do that. I've done that 500 times. Well, not 500 times, but a bunch of times. You know, things like that.
Is
but,
that when you get mad at your wife, you change the door locks?
No, that's when my son. Popped the deadbolt out so it was sticking out of the door, and then he whacked it against the door frame about 500 times till he bent the deadbolt. So anyway, back when he was a kid, and it's 10 o'clock already.
Yeah, I'm gonna get going, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah,
hey, thanks, Alan. I got going too. I got to get up at like 4:30 tomorrow because we got a release going on.
Ooh, boy!
What do you need me there for?
Release the hounds!
Release the hounds!
You know what?
Good night, everybody.
You still there, Rich?
I'm here.
See you guys.
You know, hey, have a good one, man. You know, it's not good. I should replace the alternator on the Fit. And I thought it was a lot more like I needed more specialized tools than I really do. And I was just looking at a video on how to do that. They said it's not an easy procedure, moderately difficult. and probably take a couple hours to do, but it doesn't really look that difficult.
Well, there's, I'll tell you what I'm shocked at. My truck, the GMC Envoy, it's a 2007, has the original starter, original alternator. I did change the water pump, but all of that stuff is, I can't believe that stuff's still working, and it's probably 160,000 miles on it.
Not bad. See, my thing too is, especially on some of the cars nowadays, they'll put shit in weird places. Like they'll put, like, the old Sebring we had, the battery, in order to get to change the battery out, which is something I could definitely do, the battery, you have to actually take the wheel off, and then you have to pop the cowling around that wheel off, then pull the battery. You know, to jump it, actually they had jump points in the under the hood. But, and that's the stuff I just don't want to dick with. It's just, it's as much as I would love that kind of thing, saving money, it's just I don't have the tools, and a lot of times it's the time. Like, I could change my oil, but it would take me 3-4 hours. I go to a place to have it change the oil, and I get it done in an hour, or less.
So here's my point about change the oil. Changing my oil doesn't save me any money, but I am using the best oil possible, whereas if I went and got my oil changed, they're just going to put yesterday's dinosaur in, whereas I'm putting, a full synthetic that's designed for the GDI engine.
Yep. Well, I know that the Chevy dealer, they put the synthetic blend that the dealer, the manufacturer recommends. So they don't put any, they put, now granted, whether it's freaking Havoline or Valvoline, I could give a crap, As long as it's good enough oil, it's not, as long as it's not Super Tech oil from Walmart, I don't care. But so, and their prices are relatively reasonable at the dealer. Actually,
what's it cost for an oil change at the dealer?
I don't know. I've only ever been charged for one there. At that particular dealer. The other one I have, they were between $40 and $50. Just depends on the car.
Yeah, because realistically, I don't know what 2 jugs of the Pennzoil Platinum cost, but, and a filter, but I'm easily in that range
right,
to do my own oil change.
Yeah, I mean, so like I said, it's not too bad, and they always do a good job with it. Not all dealers are assholes. I've been fortunate. Both the Chevy dealers that are within range of my house are actually fairly decent, both in the sales area and in the service area. I've never had too much of a problem with either. Although I will say this, used to be where I could go either on the website or pick up the phone and call, like actually just schedule the appointment for the cruise for next week. But it used to be I could, like, for example, if I had the problem today, I can probably get it in Friday, no problem. And that's not the case anymore. So maybe more people are using it.
I don't want to throw a particular brand or anything under the bus.
Right.
But my local dealer, you can't call them. I actually have to go there and physically make the appointment.
That's dumb.
The service. I have no idea what they're doing and how they. There is absolutely
Did you check their website?
No way. Oh yeah, all that, dude. What do you think? I invented the internet. yeah, no, there. You have
okay,
to
Al
show
Gore.
Up. Yes. If Al Gore can claim it, I'm claiming it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. At least, like, with me, I didn't even have to call my dealer. I just went right to their website and I said, let's see, when's the first? Oh, first available, that's not going to work because Luke's got League at, and here's the worst part. Traffic in Columbus is starting to get worse. Like, he has a league that starts around 5-ish on, well, both Wednesday and Monday. He has 2 different leagues he's in now. And in order to make it there on time, you pretty much got to leave, I would say, no later than 4. And in normal traffic, you're talking 20, 30 minutes away. It's that bad. So it's ridiculous. But that's why I work at home.
I hear you guys. All right, but I'm going to drop off. You guys have a good evening.
Yep.
All right, yeah, I got to close it up too.
Yep, yep.
All right.
So we'll go ahead and close the show up, and then I'll chat with you a little bit after you close the show.
Yeah, it was 8:25. Here are your promos. Thank you.
Oh my God!
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together. The power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Let's stop the show. Say goodnight, Joe.
Good night.